Good morning. You know who this is? It's Dan again in Little Saigon with your Little Saigon report. It's actually really early. I just haven't been able to sleep yet. It's really early. It's like January the 12th. Holy crap. Holy crap. If my financial situation doesn't change, I will be at least literally homeless. I might have a place I can couch surf, but I will be literally homeless within a couple weeks. And that's okay. So, you know, I'm not complaining. This is not feeling sorry for myself. And it's really not that special. There are a lot of people these days. Maybe they're not all as old as me, but maybe a lot of people about my age, almost 50. A lot of people in their 20s and 30s who haven't quite figured out how to make this great American dream work for them yet. And we're considered outcasts because, well, why are we such losers? That's the funny thing. It's like the way that the quote-unquote swells or successful deal with us is that we must be losers because we can't figure out how to do it. We can't crack the code. But it's okay. That's not the topic. The topic for this podcast has to do with voting. But in order to talk about voting, and when I say voting, I don't mean if you voluntarily form a group or a club and you decide to have a vote. I still think that's silly, but I'm not talking about, you know, private people voting on private things. If they want to do that as a way to resolve conflict, because really that's what voting is. It's a conflict resolution tool. It doesn't need to be a government. People can vote if they want to. They can get a group of people together and vote. In no way does that have to create or establish some tyranny. So yeah, this topic is voting, but before I go too deep, I want to talk about government a bit. Because, yeah, before 2 years ago, I would have called myself a libertarian. Really, you know, 2.5 years ago. But, you know, I call myself an anarchist, but, you know, and I am a newly minted anarchist. I'm kind of a free-range anarchist, kind of like, you know, the Christianity and the anarchism have very similar sources for me. It was more inspiration than the result of reading a bunch of books. It's not to say that I haven't read a lot of books. It's just that in real terms, I wouldn't call myself either a biblical scholar in terms of my Christianity, and I would not call myself an expert on what I would call the general ideology of anarchism. All I can tell you is I think the non-aggression principle is essentially wise, that it would be just and correct to live in a world where everybody was sovereign and free, and that's it. And, you know, we should all respect each other. And as long as we're living in that world, it is my belief the outcomes, all things being equal, you know, the true invisible hand will actually function. And guess what? In that world, you really wouldn't have mega corporations with armies, probably. I don't think you would. But anyways, I don't want to go too far into that yet about the free world. I want to talk about the world we're in. And here's kind of a story. Because to me, this is the story. I'm going to call the title of the story The Magical Crocodile. Because, you know, I've talked about the crocodile before, and I think it's a good analogy. Crocodiles are dangerous. Crocodiles can get quite large. And crocodiles kill people. They do. You have to be careful if you're in the outback of Australia, from what the television set tells us, because I don't know. The internet says this is true, but supposedly there are certain parts of Australia where you wouldn't want to fuck with a crocodile, or just don't go to that watering hole. Don't look like a tasty nugget, a tasty niblet. In that part of the world, the only living thing that should be playing with crocodiles are French bulldogs. You know, clearly you can tell how I feel about French bulldogs at this point. But yeah, so anyways, crocodiles are big and dangerous and stupid. They're not necessarily super smart. I mean, they're smart in their own way. Don't get me wrong. I want to respect the crocodile. But it's not like if you were playing chess, it's not like the crocodile would win, okay? Or even would know how to move it. The crocodile would not know how to play. The point is, you're not going to play chess with a crocodile. If you expect to, you're a fucking idiot. The crocodile is going to eat you. Not because it's some inherently smarter or wiser creature. You know, if Ebola kills you, it's not because Ebola's smarter. It's because you just kind of were unlucky or stupid or both. Anywho, so the title of the story is The Magical Crocodile. So once upon a time, right? Because that's how you start a story, right? Once upon a time, there was a village. And the village of people, you know, they had problems, but they had good times and bad times. And for a period of time, they have a lot of pain, not enough rain to grow food, not enough deer in the jungle or in the woods to hunt. So they were hungry. And there wasn't enough fish in the river. And there wasn't enough, you know, fowl or birds or, you know, ducks in the sky to shoot with their arrows. It just wasn't enough. They were very hungry. So one day there was, you know, a town elder, a village elder down by the river, and a magical crocodile, very small one, like a baby magical crocodile, shows up and says, "Listen, buddy, I can see you guys have problems. You're all really hungry." It turns out that I can feed you fish. And I will provide as much fish as you need, but in order for me to help you, I have to, you know, be able to come into your village and break into your homes and tell you, you know, whether or not what you're reading or talking about is okay. Sometimes I won't like what you're saying. And you know, but it won't be too bad at first, really. Actually, I could probably only visit one of your houses, and you have 100 houses. So I could visit maybe one house a year. But one time a year, you know, I'm probably going to visit your house, and someone's going to get killed. And so the elder thinks about it, because the whole village is in danger. And the baby crocodile is only going to, you know, maybe terrorize, maybe. According to it, maybe. It's hypothetical. He didn't say for sure. Maybe terrorize one home a year, and there's 100 homes, and, you know, that's not so bad. So the elder goes back to the village, and they debate it, and they vote, which in a sense led to the first, you know, yeah, but they vote, and they say, you know what, we all live together in peace, but we got real problems. We never thought we needed anything like a, you know, magical crocodile, but it is promising us food. Fish. And so the villagers say, you know, shit, man, we're hungry as fuck. We need our beer. We need our beer and our pizza chips and our confuti and all of our gremlin and everything we shove down our mouth pipes. We need all the things we need that we can buy at the Walmart. So fuck, man, this sounds like a fair deal. Why don't you make the deal with the magical crocodile? Baby magical crocodile. So they do. They go back to the river and they say, wow, dude, thank you. Yeah, we'll go. And so the crocodile goes away. And for a few years, you know, usually around Christmas, one or two homes are ravaged by a crocodile. And sometimes it's three homes, but it's not never more than three. Sometimes babies are eaten, but that's okay. Other babies are born and they're not starving. And yeah, the magical crocodile does deliver some food. I mean, it's curious because the food looks awfully like food from a village far, far away. But yeah, the magical crocodile does deliver some food and people are happy. But then one day, the same elder, a few years later, is down by the river and the magical crocodile shows up and man, it's bigger. It's actually about, you know, 20 feet long. And it looks at him and it says, you know, listen, buddy, things have gotten more complicated. We're going to need a little bit more to sort of keep this going. But listen, I'm still getting you guys food. And it looks like, you know, for the most part, you've forgotten how to farm yourselves. So, hey, can you just let me terrorize maybe 20% of your homes this year? You know, once or twice a month, you know, maybe twice a year, 20% of your homes. And so the elder's shaking his head and sad because he knows that life had become a lottery to some extent at that point, but it was a relatively low probability lottery in a sense. You know, about the same as a Tesla exploding. So yeah, he goes ahead and goes back to the village, and they talk amongst themselves, and they vote the power of voting, and they vote for it. They say, yes, we'll let 20% of our neighbors suffer horrible experiences from a 20-foot crocodile, no longer a baby, but still just 20 feet long. And 20% twice a year. So yeah, this actually happened for a few years. It happened, you know. One in five families suffered tremendous rape and destruction and theft and murder. And yes, more babies were eaten and more people were eaten by this 20-foot crocodile, which every year was getting bigger and hungrier. But he stuck to his 20%. He grew about 50%, maybe more than that, maybe 100%. So then, a few years later, the elder, who is a bit, you know, a bit, you might say, a bit more skittish about going down to the river, but yeah, the elder who needed to go down to the river, he really didn't like going down to the river any longer. He wanted someone else to go, but now he was the official representative to, you know, for the community to work with the crocodile. And he goes down to the river and he says, you know, and then it's like, holy shit, out of the river, because the river was actually very, very high that day. So out of the river rises this essentially 400-foot long crocodile. And he looks down and he smells of whiskey. You know, you just have to know this. The crocodile basically smells of whiskey, and he's really groggy, and he's popped some pills. It looks like he has some tumors, but the point is, he is a 400-foot long crocodile now. And the elder is a bit shocked, as you might yourself be, if a 400-foot crocodile is staring at you from your river. And the crocodile says, you know, buddy, I don't know how to say this. I think I need to, like, every week now visit half your homes and just, you know, damage them a little. I know I can't keep eating babies, maybe, but I'm going to anyways. Yeah. The elder goes back to the village votes, and all of this happens. Many years later, a monk of some strange order, of some ancient mystical Asian order, is walking along, and he's walking along with one of his students, and they walk down a trail that leads to a place that's filled with nothing but charcoal and broken plates and nothing but destruction. All the buildings are smashed. Everything is destroyed. And the student asks the monk, what happened here? And it says, well, the monk says, you know, here's the deal. I can teach you all kinds of wisdom, and I'm probably just a jackass. And at the end of the day, gurus are bullshit, and you should take control of your own life. But here's what I will also tell you. Never make a deal with a magical fucking crocodile. The end. So when people ask me why am I an anarchist? Because here's the deal. I don't think voting works, okay, you know, and I don't think government works, and I do want to figure out a way to live in this world. It's not easy. And I want to do so in peace. I don't want to vote for force to be used against other people. I don't want to violate the non-aggression principle by proxy, because that's really what voting is. I mean, you know, I'm going to say a lot about voting and government because they're related in this podcast. I feel like trying to pull them apart is like trying to separate oxygen from hydrogen and water. I mean, sometimes people think, well, government, you know, democracy came late. But I actually, here's my theory. I think government ultimately probably began as a result of people in a village setting saying, you know what? that guy over there, he knows when the moon is angry. He knows when the waters will fall. He must be connected to some secret force in the universe, and by some divine right, we're going to let him or her, it, thou, you know, thou, we're going to let thou run our lives. We're going to let it run our lives, because that person knows things we do not know. And that's how it could have happened. You know, the first moment of government was likely, if we're talking chicken and egg here, my honest opinion is democracy came before government. You know, I think democracy is conflict resolution. I think you're going to find it in some fairly natural ways in lots of situations. And I'm not totally opposed to democracy as a conflict resolution tool. Do I think it always works? Well, it's kind of like betting markets. I think betting markets are pretty cool. You know, I think InTrade, and I think it's called InTrade, but I think that betting markets, online betting markets, where people bet on things like, is the Fed funds rate going to go up? Is some famous dude going to die? It's horrible, but I actually think betting markets are pretty cool, okay? I don't think people should bet on death, but betting on whether there's going to be a war someplace, yeah, I think it can be cool. I think that, you know, war is terrible, but it's also good to be smart. And war is terrible. So betting on wars is like betting on the weather. I think having a betting market for weather makes sense, because it could lead to people being smarter about weather. I do not want to talk about weather control. It's a very disgusting topic. I think Dane Wigington, I think is his name, is a brilliant podcaster and YouTuber and activist. If you don't know who he is, you should research him yourself. He's great. But I don't want to talk about that. But assuming the weather were not manipulated, assuming the weather were du jour, or I should say as is, or all whatever, assuming the weather was as is, betting markets can help people get smarter about the weather. So I'm a big fan of betting markets, you know, and betting markets in an almost pure sense, a betting market is a natural expression of a kind of democracy. It is a kind of voting. You know, when people throw their money into a situation, they're saying to themselves, I think something is going to happen. Doesn't mean they like it, but they're essentially voting on a possibility. But voting that results in oppression is terrible. And that's the problem. You know, people have turned voting into a moral justification for government. But actually, what if voting is the reason why this crocodile, you know, ended up coming along in the first place? I will tell you this. I've had a couple podcasts where I've talked about this. And I've written about this, because in the 2 years that I've, you know, accepted that I am an anarchist and I'm happy about it, I've thought about what that means to me. In real terms, it means avoiding conflict with the crocodile. It isn't just 400 feet long now. It's 10 billion tons. It's huge. And yes, it has a very tiny brain. It is highly delusional. It has huge delusions of grandeur. It's a very creepy institution. And so you have two choices. Do you A, try to pretend that you can go up against it like some outlaw and win? I mean, there are people who do that, and God bless them. If, as long as they're not harming other people, as long as they're just being outlaws, you know, trying to practice a free life in a prison state, God bless them if they're not harming people. I actually think that is admirable, but it is also extremely dangerous. And there are other valid choices. If you're an anarchist, you can do what I do and accept that periodically, and it's horrible, and I don't like it, but as an anarchist, you have to accept that whether it's buying a mobile device or trying to get, you know, rent an apartment or trying to access money or get paid, periodically, you just have to feed the crocodile. You have to toss meat at it, and you know in your heart that every time you toss meat at it, You're either making it bigger or just in the very least, you're keeping it alive. You're feeding the crocodile on the assumption that at least it isn't going to kill you today. But I know in my heart that this only ends in two ways, basically. Well, yeah, basically. It either ends through the crocodile dying and we somehow have a chance to come back to life again as human beings in this society, or it ends with the crocodile dying and destroying us in the process. Okay? The crocodile could end up destroying us and destroying itself. It's so many crocodiles throughout history have done that. You know, in many ways, that's kind of what happened to ancient Carthage. Carthage was a war state. Carthage was a kind of empire. It went up against Rome. And I'm not saying the Romans are better. Boy, don't even get me started on the Roman crocodile. Boy, I should talk about that one next. But anyways, Carthage was no worse a crocodile. Carthage was not necessarily any more evil a crocodile than any of the other crocodiles in the ancient world, but Carthage did suffer one of the fates of the crocodile. And that is that eventually crocodiles can die, but they also take you down with them. And so essentially Carthage was completely destroyed. I mean, the final little war between Rome and Carthage, which was well after the Second Punic War, you know, because Cato the Elder would constantly say, why is Carthage still here? Blah, blah, blah. Good old Cato the Elder. Anyways, the final conflict, Carthage was obliterated. The women and children were enslaved. And they literally drove a plow. Well, all the men were killed, and they literally drove a plow down the middle of Carthage symbolically, because they used to salt the earth. This is something they did. That was kind of like chemical warfare. And oh, by the way, salt was a valuable thing back then. So if you're going to like salt the earth, it's like a double whammy, but it's also expensive. Needless to say, they drove a plow down the middle of Carthage. And I think this is in the middle of the 2nd century BC. And filled it with salt symbolically. So sometimes crocodiles simply die. Rarely do they go away. They simply die. Once you've made a deal with a crocodile, one of two things is going to happen. It isn't going to go away. It isn't going to shrink, okay? I'm sorry. If you think you're going to put your crocodile, you know, a lot of these people who believe, like libertarians, God bless them. I love libertarians, but they really believe that you can put the crocodile on a diet. And I don't know. Maybe. I mean, how you put the giant 10 billion ton crocodile on a diet, every time you say to yourself, go on a diet, it comes back to you and says, listen, you see that village over there? I want to go blow it up so I can feed you, so you can feed me. I mean, that's it. It gets worse. Our defense budget is probably going to be $1 trillion a year. Within a decade. That's my guess. Probably sooner. So the crocodiles don't shrink. You're not going to put the crocodile on a diet. I love Ron Paul, but, and I like Rand Paul, but they believe that they can have limited government. The crocodile, it never goes away, voluntarily goes away, okay? It never does. There is, you know, if you can kill it, but it isn't going to go away. It doesn't shrink. You really can't, you know, you can be a criminal with a crocodile. Like you could say, listen, I'll help you, crocodile. If you don't come into my home and eat my babies and kill my family, I'll help you with killing families down the street. You can do that. It turns out George Soros did that as a very young man during World War II. You know, he helped the crocodile find other people to kill. Such a hero. But the point is, you can't put the crocodile on a diet. I know you want to believe this. I know there are Republicans and other people who believe. You know, it's like the convention of states, the people that want to rewrite the Constitution. Listen. That's, you want to stick the IKEA furniture in the thing and reverse it. You want to put the crocodile on a diet, people. You will never, ever, ever put the crocodile on a diet. It will only get scarier and bigger and uglier and stupider, and its delusions will only get worse as it gets bigger. Its brain never gets bigger. This is what you need to know about the crocodile. Its brain never gets bigger, okay? It will be incredibly stupid till the end, but it does become gigantic and tumorous and diseased, and it will eventually die. This is what you must know about the crocodile throughout all of history. And this will never be false. Every one of these fucking crocodiles dies. These governments collapse. These empires collapse. This is an absolute truth of history. Empires collapse. The very key to their failure is baked into their DNA from the beginning. So these crocodiles, these magical crocodiles that you keep voting for, which again is a feeding process, they'd never collapse. So here's the deal. You're not going to vote to put the crocodile on a diet. If you think you're going to vote to do that, I know I'm being mean, but that's crazy. It really is crazy. You can try to avoid the crocodile. You can try to feed it. I currently feed it sometimes, and then I avoid it the rest of the time. So, like, for example, if I don't have a choice about paying taxes, I pay them. If they wanted to audit me, you know, I don't know what would happen, honestly. It's not like I'm rich, so technically I think they would owe me money. But they'll never do that. If they audit you, it's not like they're going to... If they figure it out, like, they're not going to figure out if they owe you money. No, no, no. That you're assuming a just world where you're a sovereign being. No. If the IRS audits you, they want to know what you owe them. If they actually owe you, they could not give a fuck. Oh, my God. Don't get me started on the evils. But, yeah... If I don't have a choice about paying a tax, like a lot of shitty mobile phone plans have all these shitty taxes baked into them. Listen, if I don't have a choice about paying a tax for my dog collar, I pay it. I pay these taxes. They're stupid. I pay them. But when it comes to voting, which is also another feeding, it feeds the ego, okay? The taxes feed the mouth of the crocodile. But the voting feeds the ego of the crocodiles, because the crocodile is a whole being. It's kind of on Maslow's hierarchy. It's a fucked up pyramid. It's kind of tilted over. But, you know, the crocodile needs love. The crocodile wants to eat, but the crocodile also needs love. So yes, every time you vote, you're feeding the spirit of the crocodile. And everyone will say, well, listen, this year we have a representative to the crocodile. We have two people running to represent the crocodile, to represent our interests before the crocodile. We have two people running this year. We have an elderly woman that looks like a cone and falls over all the time and is crazy and is a real strange kind of Bolshevik who doesn't care about murdering lots of people, Hillary, or we can vote for a crony businessman who's a scam artist and probably a liar, but he kind of plays to people's egos and their fears, and their legitimate fears, and he says a lot of things a lot of people can agree with. And I'll also be honest, he has a lot of enemies I hate personally, and that's Trump, and they will represent our interests before the crocodile. And people believe that if one of those people gets chosen, that the crocodile will not be hungry or even more hungry or stop being such a jerk. No, the crocodile is going to treat the representative exactly the way the crocodile would treat you. It's just that the crocodile is lazy. And the crocodile would prefer you to go through this process, and it wants its ego fed. That's what the representative is for. That's what the president and the senators and all of these government officials you vote for, that's what they're for. They're so that people in government can say, well, wow, this is great. People love the crocodile. People love us. As the crocodile breaks down your door and sticks a submachine gun in your face, at least you can also be happy to know that if you're a voter, the crocodile knows that you love it. Ugh. And I'd also say this. This isn't directly related to voting, but I want to call this pooping on the moon, okay? As you well know, a number of weeks ago, I had to babysit a French bulldog for a week because some people I know were in Hawaii. And I got to know some of the behaviors of the French bulldog, and really, they're terrible animals. They're terrible creatures. They really shouldn't exist. They're almost impossible. They were manufactured through breeding. And when they bleat, and I don't mean bark, I mean bleat, because I don't even know a better word for it. When they're yelping or talking, when they start talking, they talk in ways that sound almost like utterances, but they're not human. They're like demonic. It's like... So anyways, the point I'm getting at is that the crocodile is a good analogy, but another good analogy for government is that French bulldog. And the one thing about the French bulldog is that if it can do something, it will. Government's like that. I mean, government doesn't say, well, I can do this, but I probably shouldn't. It's like, if government could build the atom bomb, it was going to do it. If government could drop bombs on test sites and blow up islands, the government was going to do it. If the government could nuke a couple cities, which, you know, randomly enough were the two main centers of Christianity in Asia during World War II, yeah, they'll nuke them. You know what I'm saying? If the government can do, like, if the government can launch nukes into space during the test era, when they were testing, with rockets way up in the atmosphere, way up in space, and blow them up, big, big nuclear bombs blowing up in space. If the government can do it, it will. Just like a French bulldog. If the French bulldog can poop in your hallway and pretend that that's his poop place, it doesn't give a shit about you. It doesn't care who you are. Now, if you put up a barrier that it can't get past, unlike the magical crocodile, the French bulldog is only ever going to get so big. So the good news is there is limited government for French bulldogs. There is. There is some limited restriction on the French bulldog. You can control it because it physically cannot do certain things. But yeah. So it's like the government. If the government looks at the moon, I mean, sure, there's a Vietnam War. There's poverty. There's all kinds of bullshit. And they're starting to get into big debts and running big deficits, something that the French noticed and started wanting to get their gold. You know, I don't know how much you know about the gold window closing, but in the 1960s, yeah, they were starting to get into debt. But no, the French bulldog called the United States of America in the 1960s, which was already pooping all over the world. We're already pooping. Now, here's the thing about French bulldogs. They won't poop in places they care about. So if you go to Washington, D.C. sometime, you'll probably see some really nice neighborhoods and probably some shitty ones too. But in the outer donut, you'll probably see some nice neighborhoods. Like in the nice outer suburbs of Washington, D.C., I've been told are really nice. That's because French bulldogs do, generally speaking, they don't poop where they eat, which is wise. And they don't poop, you know, where they play, which is wise. But French bulldogs will poop in places they don't care about. So yeah, back in the 60s, we were pooping everywhere. We were pooping big time in Vietnam. And then we looked at the moon, and it's like, holy fuck, I'm a French bulldog. That moon is awesome. If only I could build a rocket, I could go to the moon. I could poop on the moon. And I'm not saying I believe the story about Apollo. I am deeply skeptical of it. But assuming everything they said was true, it was a monumental waste of money for something that we forgot how to do. So we basically figured out how to solve something once. We threw away the plans. We blew up all everything about it. But at least we pooped on the moon. I don't know what else to say. If you want to use voting as a conflict resolution tool, you're in a club meeting for the pirate sailing club of East Ballard, and you're figuring out where you're going to take your ships next month to harass the western pirates of the northern Puget Sound. if this is your plan and you want to vote to decide the strategies of the sailing boats, your Catalinas and your West White Potters and your catamarans, and figure out who's going to mount the shotguns on their bow to exchange, you know, grape shot fire between vessels, probably be paint guns because you don't want to kill each other. So, yeah, okay, whatever. You want to vote on that kind of inconsequential bullshit that I don't have to be interested in anyways? I don't care. If you're a D&D club and you want to pick who's a new member and you want to exclude people as a private club, I don't give a fuck. If you're a Freemason and you go to some secret cave someplace to vote on what kind of beer you're going to have on tap at next month's meeting, and I know they don't drink, God, yeah, believe all sorts of crazy shit, dude, whatever. Point is, if you're a Freemason, whether you drink or not or whatever, or they don't drink in the clubhouse, that's it, whatever, I don't care. That's your inconsequential bullshit. If it's your private property and your person and you're voting with a voluntary group about how you will all resolve the use of your time or your money, but I don't have to be involved, I don't give a fuck. But every time you vote in the United States of America, you're feeding the ego of the most gigantic crocodile that has ever existed. And actually, it has a little bit of French bulldog DNA. So in addition to being this monstrous crocodile, unlike crocodiles in Australia, which mostly stake out an area and stay there, this super giant crocodile with a little bit of French bulldog DNA, it wants to go everywhere and poop. And so, oh, by the way, it's not just that you're feeding the ego of the crocodile so it doesn't poop on you too often or eat all your babies, but you're also funding it so it can definitely poop on other people, other villages, and eat their babies, aka the Middle East, places like Libya, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, which isn't in the Middle East, but the point is, all around the world, you're feeding the ego of a monster that is a giant crocodile that also wants to poop everywhere. And it pooped on the moon, right? That's awesome. But it forgot how it pooped on the moon, which I suppose, given its current size, I mean, given what it does when it poops places, maybe that's a blessing. Anyways, you keep on voting out there. In government, you keep on pooping on the moon, man. You fuck.